We are in week two of our series on Gideon, and we are talking about courage in the face of fear and leading with dependence. And so, can you imagine if God called you to do something that was exponentially bigger than you? Like, I mean, just think about it for a second. What if he did? What if he called you to do something that seemed insurmountable, that was way, 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 way outside of your comfort zone? Well, here's what I know, that a bunch of you are afraid of this. It's like, you're okay being a Christian enough to get into heaven, but you don't want to be one of those Christians that like does what God says, because you know you might be afraid that God might ask you to do something a little bit crazy that you don't want to do. But can you imagine if God did that, called you to do something that would be beyond yourself? Would you get a little nervous? Or would you be a little scared? You know, what's interesting is, like, I don't have to imagine it. I just have to remember. You know what the number one fear in America is, actually? Public speaking. You know that's the number one fear? Like, people are more afraid of public speaking than sharks. Like, I don't get that, because sharks seem pretty bad. They're more afraid of public speaking than alligators. In fact, public speaking ranks above death. Can you believe that? People be like, man, public speaking, put me in the box now. I'm done. I'm out. Well, I remember the very first time I ever stood in front of people speaking. I was volunteering at the church that I was at, and I was forced to speak in the middle school ministry, and I had to teach Lazarus, the story of Lazarus, to like 8 middle schoolers and a handful of adults. That was scary. It was the first time I had ever been like public speaking. Well, then I remember a number of years later, as I kind of got into being a youth pastor and I moved over to a much larger church, I was asked to speak on a Wednesday night to that church, and that was 2,000 people in the room. That was scary. A number of months later, they asked me to speak again on the weekend. 10,000 people in the room. You want to fill your drawers? Do that. Then I remember when Melissa and I realized that we felt like God was calling us to leave that church. I mean, it was a great church. I mean, we were having fun, tons of friends. Things were going so good. It was like kind of the NFL of churches that I was able to be. And we felt like God was asking us to leave that place and come down here to this crazy place near Orlando or near Disney with a bunch of people that we really didn't know to start a new church. And we had 4 kids, 7 and under. That was scary. You know, every time we felt like, God, if you don't show up, I'm going to fall flat on my face. Like, this is going to be ugly. Like, I'm going to be embarrassed. I'm never going to come back. If you don't show up when I'm speaking in front of this many people, and we're like, God, if you don't show up when we move down here, like, this is going to be a waste. You know, one of those things where we're just like, God, you've got to come through for us, because this is bigger than us. This is beyond us. Well, let me just tell you, I believe that God has a calling for you that is bigger than you. I believe that God has a calling on your life that can only be accomplished if he shows up, because it's beyond your abilities, beyond your understanding, beyond even your dreams. Well, let me just tell you, if you can kind of get that feeling going on inside of you of what it might be like if God called you out beyond your comfort zone, then you're ready to study Judges 6, 7, and 8, the story of Gideon. Last week, we looked at Gideon and how God calls ordinary people to do extraordinary things. So I want to recap Judges 6 for you. This whole series of Judges 6 last week, Judges 7 today, Judges 8 next week. But we learned last week in Judges 6 that the people of Israel, they were being oppressed and mistreated by the people of Midian for 7 years, and they finally called out to God for help, and God heard them, and out of all the people that God could have chosen to rescue Israel, he chooses Gideon. But Gideon was like not this like likely choice. He was small of stature. He wasn't rich. He's in the weakest clan of the 12 tribes of Israel. And when we meet him, he is hiding in a wine press, down in a wine press. He's afraid. He is full of fear. He is full of insecurity. And he is full of excuses. So let me pry around in your life just a little bit, in your world. Where are you afraid? And you are hiding and hoping that you don't get found out and God asks you to do something. Where are you hiding and hoping that you're not called on by God to do something for him? Well, an angel of the Lord shows up to Gideon. He's in this wine press. An angel of the Lord shows up, which this angel is God. This kind of encounter in the Bible is called a Christophany or a theophany. It is God the Son, Jesus, showing up on earth in human form before his physical birth. So Jesus shows up to Gideon, calls him mighty warrior before he's even won a battle or even been in a fight. It's like his biggest fight probably was like arguing with his mom over the dishes. But this is just like God. Like God does not call you what you currently feel like. God calls you according to what he sees in you and what he wants to do through you. What does that mean? That means that God will look at your addiction. God will look at your divorce. He will look at your insecurity. He will look at your weakness. He will look at your rebellion. He will look at all that and still look at you and say, mighty warrior of God. Mighty warrior of God. He will call you what he is calling you to become. So what does God do? He speaks into Gideon's identity. Gideon, you are a mighty warrior because I'm with you. But Gideon is like a total hard sell. Like he is like, God, I'm not that guy. I am not that guy. I am afraid. He has a lot of doubts. And so Gideon says, okay, if what you're saying is true, you need to prove it to me. You stay here, and I'm going to go and prepare a meal and a sacrifice, and I'm going to be back in a little while. So you stay here. Jesus waits for Gideon to come back. Gideon comes back. God is still there. God in the flesh, Jesus is still there, and Gideon worships God. And then God gives Gideon an assignment. Gideon, you go and get rid of all the false gods the Israelites in your town are worshiping. I want you to burn them. I want you to take them down, burn them, and I want you to set up an altar that to the one true God, me. Gideon is completely afraid. He's like, I don't know if I can do that. That's really scary. So what he does is he is obedient, but he does it at night so no one can see him. So in the morning, the town people wake up. All of their gods that they had been serving, besides the one true God, all the Asherah poles, they called them, which were kind of like idols that they had set up, all of them are gone, they're burned up, and there's an altar to the Lord there. And basically, the town people are like, who did this? They find out it's Gideon. They go after him to kill him. Like, they are literally hunting him down to take his life. His dad steps in and kind of talks them down, and Gideon starts being seen a little differently because he was obedient to God. But you see, sometimes we think that if God calls us to do something, everything's going to get easier, right? We just tend to think that. We're like, okay, God called me, God is with me, God gave me a promise, so surely the path is going to open up, the resources are going to increase, the people are going to rally, the budget, it's going to grow, the marriage is going to immediately get better, the kids are going to start quoting Proverbs at breakfast, and everybody's going to be emotionally healthy by Tuesday. Like, that's what we think. God called us. Everything's going to go better. That is not how following God works. If God calls you to do something and everything gets easier, you're probably not following God. Because there's not a single story in the Bible where someone said yes to following God and their life got easier. And this story is going to tell us why that is. At the end of Judges 6, there's this small half verse that tells us what happens right before Gideon calls up the army of Israel. Judges 6:34, after Gideon had done all that, taken down the poles, put up an altar to God, says in verse 34, then the Spirit of the Lord clothed Gideon with power. Important part of that first half verse. He blew a ram's horn as a call to arms, and the men of the clan of Abiezer came to him. He also sent messengers through Manasseh, Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, summoning their warriors, and all of them responded. Now, here's what I find interesting about this and very informative. First and foremost, you can be sure that if God calls you to do something for him, calls you to step out in faith, calls you to actually lead and take responsibility, step into the unknown, he's going to give you the strength and the power to do it. It's like we say it around here, where God guides, he provides. You can trust him. Where God guides, he provides. He'll give you what you need to fulfill the mission that he's called you to. But what I find interesting about this part of the story is that God clothed Gideon with power after he had already been obedient and taken down the idols. God didn't clothe Gideon with power for that. Well, what was that? That was an opportunity for Gideon to be obedient in something small. It was an opportunity to be for Gideon to be obedient and prove faithful in something small compared to what God wanted to do through Gideon. And that small act of obedience was a precursor to Gideon being able to do the huge thing that God was calling him to do. So let me ask you, what if God, doing something in you and through you that is far beyond you, is one small act of obedience away? What if the miracles you've prayed for? What if the desire that you have in your heart to see movement in your life or someone else's life? Or the hope you have of a better or a different future that you believe God has for you? What if that is one small act of obedience away? One small act of you doing what you know God has already asked you to do, and it unlocks God's power in you in a new way. See, for Gideon, it was after that act of obedience, God clothed him in a power that was greater for what was to come next. But even with all that power, Gideon still had doubts. He didn't all of a sudden like become He-Man and have like perfect confidence, you know? He's like, oh, we got this. He said, God, I need more confirmation. I need more confirmation. I need you to prove again that you're with me. And so this is what he does. He says, God, I'm going to put this fleece out on the ground, and in the morning, I will know you're with me if the fleece is wet and all the ground around it is dry. Gideon puts the fleece out the next morning. Boom. It's exactly like Gideon says, and Gideon says, darn it. And then Gideon is like, okay, God, please don't be mad with me, but I need one more. Like, can we do one more? I just got to be sure. And so he says, this time, I'm going to put the fleece out, and I want the fleece to be dry and all the ground to be wet. Next morning, boom, God does it again. Side note, do you know God doesn't chastise Gideon for his doubt? He doesn't get mad at Gideon for questioning him. He doesn't get upset with Gideon because he's like, why do I got to confirm it to you? I just said it to you. Let me just tell you, like, you need to know it's okay to ask God to confirm and show you that he's with you. It's not off the table. It's not like, well, you just don't do that to God. Really, oftentimes, you know what that is? When we take our doubts to God, we're being honest and real with him, which is what he wants. God wants access. He doesn't need you to be perfect. He just wants access. God will meet you in your doubt. Like, for those of you that aren't followers of Jesus, you just need to know, if you're checking out the God thing, it's okay to bring your doubts to God. He's a big God. Like, he's not like, oh no, they doubt me. What am I going to do? He's like, no, please bring them to me. Because every time someone brings their doubts to God, God meets them in them. Doesn't chastise them, doesn't look down on them. Just meets them. And so God confirms that he is with Gideon, and things really start to get interesting, okay? Like, things start to, like, instead of making the situation easier, God actually makes the situation harder, actually almost impossible. Gideon calls out the army of Israel. He blows the horn, and all of those tribes respond. 32,000 soldiers show up. And I would say that is a rousing success, right? Sounds like a lot until you realize that the enemy, Midian, we find out later in the story, has over 120,000 troops. So already, Gideon's army is outnumbered 4-1. And I'll tell you, he's not standing there thinking, you know what we have, guys? Too many soldiers. We got too many. And that's where God looks at Gideon's 32,000 going up against 120,000. And he actually says, no, Gideon, seriously, you have too many soldiers. And if I'm Gideon, I'm going, Lord, I don't think math is your thing. I don't think you're very good at that. Because we all have like a natural instinct, right? When something really, really matters to us, we try and take control. Like, you got a problem at home? Figure it out. Fix it. Manage it. Something feels off in your life? Work harder. Think smarter. Push through. Your kid is struggling? Try to control their choices a little better, parents. Your marriage is strained? Try to control the outcome. Your future feels uncertain. You just build a plan that's so airtight that not even God can mess it up. That's kind of what most of us have been trained to believe, that if we apply enough effort and strategy and hustle and control, we can handle it. And honestly, that kind of works for a little while. until you come up against something that you can't fix. Or you come up against something, a situation that you can't control. Or you have a tension that you can't solve. Or you have a weight that's so heavy you just can't carry it anymore. And when that happens, you know what many of us do? We don't surrender. We try harder. We're like, we're going to get this. We're going to control it. And what do we call it? We call it responsibility. We call it wisdom. We call it leadership. But you know what's really most of the time underneath all of that? It's fear. Fear of losing control. Fear of failure. Fear of things not going the way that we actually want them to. And so here's the tension that many of us face, kind of the tension for today. Many of us, we say we trust God. But oftentimes we arrange our lives so we really don't need to depend on Him. We say it out loud, God, we trust You. But then we organize our lives in such a way that we don't need Him. Like, it's okay if He doesn't show up for weeks at a time, months at a time. How do I know that we do that? Because we trust God when the numbers make sense, right? Like we do. We trust God when the plan's working. We trust God when the bank account is stable. We trust God when the kids are making good choices. We trust God when the future is somewhat predictable. Because we've worked so hard to set it up so it's somewhat predictable. But what happens when the numbers shrink? What happens when the plan changes? What happens when the support walks away or the thing that you were counting on is just no longer available? It's no longer there. Well, in Judges 7, we're entering into Judges 7 now, God is going to lovingly, painfully, and purposefully expose what Gideon and Israel have been trusting in. They've been trusting in themselves. They've been trusting in themselves. And God doesn't expose them because He wants to embarrass them. He exposes them because He wants to free them. So I want to share with you for the rest of our time, I want to give you three things we learn from Gideon's story when it comes to God calling you. Three things we learn from Gideon. One of the first things God does when He is calling you is God confronts the illusion of control that you have. And none of us like it when our illusion of control is confronted. We are happy to go, la, 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 I'm in control. Like, we're happy for the illusion. Well, God confronts that. He does that with Gideon. Gideon has 32,000 warriors. Judges 7, verse 2. The Lord said, Gideon, you have too many warriors with you. If I let all of you fight the Midianites, the Israelites will boast to me that they saved themselves by their own strength. Gideon, you have too many, because if you win with that many, you're going to misunderstand the victory. You're going to think you did it. You'll think your strategy saved you. You'll think your strength carried the day. You'll think your numbers delivered you. You'll think your control is the reason it worked. And I'll just say this, God loved Gideon too much to let him build his life on a false source of confidence. God just loved Gideon too much. He's like, I'm not going to let you build your life on this false source of confidence. And this is where the story gets deeper than leadership technique. Like, see, Gideon thinks that the problem is Midian. God says the deeper problem is Israel's self-reliance. Gideon sees an enemy out there. God sees a trust issue in here. That's what he sees. And that's how God often works. See, we usually want God to change what we're facing, like the thing we can see, the circumstance that we're in. God is often working to change who we're trusting in. See, we say, God, fix my spouse. Like, they are the problem, let me tell you. Like, rarely do you ever see a couple go into counseling and so anyone in the couple go, I'm the problem. They're usually like, problem right there. And they're like, problem right there. So we say, God, fix my spouse. Well, what if God can say, well, you know what? I want to form patience and humility in you. And we say, well, God, fix my finances. And God might be saying, you know what? I want to reorder your security. God, fix my kid. And God's like, no, I want to teach you how to love without control. God, fix my circumstances. God's just like, I want to deepen your dependence on me. See, God was not only trying to get Israel out of their trouble, which he cared about. He wanted to get them out of their trouble, but he also wanted to get the self-reliance out of Israel. There's a difference between asking God to help you and actually depending on him to come through. Most of us, we just want God to be our assistant, not our Lord. We're like, we just want him to bless our plan. Protect our comfort. Make sure that the outcomes go our way. But let me just tell you, following Jesus is not inviting God to help us run your life better. Following Jesus is surrendering our lives to the one who actually knows what our lives are for. That's what following Jesus looks like. Control always promises peace. You know what it usually produces? Pressure. That's what control gives us. The more you try to control everything, the more afraid you become of losing control. This is why God confronts the illusion of control that all of us have. Second thing we learn from the story of Gideon is sometimes God reduces what we rely on so we can learn who to rely on. Sometimes God reduces what we rely on so we can learn who to rely on. This is how God reduces Gideon's resources. Gideon, you have too many. Verse 3, therefore tell the people, whoever is timid or afraid may leave this mountain and go home. And no one left because they were all studs. Nope. Next part of the verse, 22,000 of them went home, only leaving 10,000 to fight. Can you imagine Gideon in that moment? Like, he has got 32,000 soldiers together, and he's like, okay, maybe there's, so you're saying there's a chance. And you give one announcement. If anybody is afraid, you can leave right now. And 22,000 guys are like, I'm out. Pew. You know, they're just gone. 22,000 guys. Can you imagine what that might have sounded like? You've got 32,000 soldiers here, and you say that, and suddenly 22,000, like, drop their stuff and start walking away. Like, Gideon had to be sitting there going, bad idea, bad idea, bad idea. Shouldn't have said a thing. I think it's crazy that he still had 10,000 guys that were like, yeah, let's do this, up against 100,000. And then God doubles down. God says, Gideon, 10,000 left, you still have too many. If you win now, you will still think that you did it. And so he has Gideon take the 10,000 men and takes them to a lake, and he has them drink water. And God says this, quote, he says, take the guys who cup water in their hands and lap it up like dogs. Now, you know what that is? More proof that God loves the dogs, not the cats. That's what that is. Only 300 men grab water in their hands and lap it up like dogs. That's it. And God says, that's how many I'm going to use. 300. That is not an army. That's like a medium-sized wedding. that's like the line at Costco at Thanksgiving time. Like, that's it. Why does God do this? Because now there will be no confusion. 300 men went against a massive army. Only explanation is God did it. And God is not being cruel. What God is being is clear. He is stripping away every false explanation for the victory, and that is the deeper pattern of God's work. God often subtracts what we would boast in so he can become who we depend on. God will often subtract what we would boast in so he can become who we depend on. And I'll just tell you, that is not easy to hear when you are living through subtraction. Because subtraction feels like loss. It feels like you're just losing. But maybe God is reducing your army to prepare you for battle. Maybe that's what's going on. And that means what I perceive as pain, what you perceive as pain, may actually be preparation for something greater. The financial trouble that you're in right now could be the greatest blessing from God that you've ever received, because he is stripping away some idols in your life so you can be prepared for what he has for you. The struggles that you're having in your marriage right now, the ones that you are thinking are just like a curse, could actually be God chastening you and sharpening you so that forgiveness is not just a theory for you, but it's a way of life. The health scare that you're having can actually be a part of God's plan so that you would cling to him and you would know that the greatest prize in life is Jesus. The difficulty in your family with your kids could actually be the path to God bringing your family to the place where the foundation of your family is Jesus. And the difficulty that you're in is going to be the way that God gets you there. See, we don't follow Jesus because he makes our life better. We follow Jesus because he's better than life. And if you're going to get anywhere with God, you've got to believe that. We don't follow him because he makes our life better. We follow him because he is better than life. And I believe that is what God is doing here in the life of Gideon. He's stripping away all this temporary comforts, all these temporary strengths, so that God would be the only thing that he clings to. I know that in my own life, if I am not desperate for God, if I'm not nervous of the outcome, if I'm not in places in my life where my prayer life has to be like, God, if you don't come through, I don't know what we're going to do. Like, those are the times where I'm abiding in him and leaning on him and depending on him. You know where the worst times of my Christian, my worst moments as a Christian are? When everything's awesome. Because I can fall into the false thinking that, like, I got this. And what's the truth of the gospel? You don't got this. That's the gospel. You don't got this. You'll never got this. Jesus got this. That's the gospel. You need him. Sometimes God's greatest grace upon you are the scariest moments of your life. Why? So you'll run to him. You'll connect with him. You'll lean on him. I mean, let's just be honest. 100 years from today, are your circumstances going to matter? No. But 100 years from today, will your relationship with God matter? It's the only thing that'll matter. Only thing that'll matter. It's God's grace upon us that he would strip everything away from us so that we might cling to him. That's the beauty of dependence. Like, dependence is our weakness surrendered to God. And when weakness is surrendered to God, it becomes the place where his strength is revealed. So God is not surprised that 22,000 guys walk away. Gideon might have been panicking a little bit. The other 10,000 soldiers might have been panicking a little bit. But God knew exactly what Gideon needed. God was confronting Gideon and Israel's illusion of control, and then he was reducing what they relied on so they could learn who to rely on. And then lastly, what we learn from Gideon's story is that God doesn't call the brave. God gives courage to the called. God doesn't call the brave that have it all together and are ready to charge hell with a squirt gun. God gives courage to the call. You can say it like God doesn't call the trained, but he trains the called. God doesn't call the equipped, but he equips the called. So Gideon and his 300 guys, they get up next to the Midianite camp, and God says, Gideon, if you are still afraid, after all this, Gideon, if you're still afraid, you and your servant sneak down to the enemy camp, and I want to show you something. The very next verse, they're in the camp. They're afraid. They're like, whoo, we're afraid. Let's go. And they hear one soldier talking to another through the tent. And the soldier says, hey, I had this dream last night of this giant loaf of bread rolling down the hill and flattening our camp. And this is where it's like we read that and we're like, oh, that's so serious. And I'm like, no, God has a sense of humor. Who's afraid of Wonder Bread? Nobody. Giant bread, oh no. The other guy in the tent goes, oh no. That can only mean that God has given us to Gideon and he's got the victory. So Gideon leaves there, goes back up, and for the first time, he starts acting with confidence. He says, boys, God has given it to us. Let's go. So this is what he does. Midianites are down in this valley. It's nighttime. He takes his 300. He breaks them into three groups of 100. He has them surround the camp up on the hills, okay? So the Midianites are all in this valley. He has his 300, 360 around them on the top of the hilltops all around this valley. Each man has a clay jar, a torch, and like a trumpet. Notice what they don't have. Weapons! They got nothing! This is not how you normally win a war. Nobody looks at that plan and goes, great strategy, 300 men holding lamps and like an instrument. That's like a marching band. Nobody has ever been afraid of a marching band. No, it's a flute section, run! You know, no one's doing that. But Gideon actually comes up with this great strategy. Verse 19, it was just after midnight, after the changing of the guard, when Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the Midianite camp. Suddenly they blew the ram's horns, broke their clay jars, and then all three groups blew their horns and broke their jars. They held the blazing torches in their left hands, the horns in their right hands, and they all shouted, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." Now, here's why this strategy was so good. In those days in battle, each torch and horn would have represented a battalion of soldiers, 300 to 1,000 men. So when they blew the horn and held up their torch and then broke the jars, which scholars say would have sounded like swords being taken out of their scabbards, and they were high enough off the ground, because they believe they know where this happened, they were high enough off the ground that when they broke those jars, it reverberated throughout the valley. Those soldiers at the bottom of that valley would have looked up, and every horn and every torch and someone yelling and swords coming out of the scabbards, they would have believed that there were 300 battalions coming down the hills. 90,000 to 300,000 troops were coming down to wipe them out. The bread was coming, baby. And it says, each man stood at his position around the camp and watched as all the Midianites rushed around in a panic, shouting as they ran to escape. When the 300 Israelites blew the ram's horns, the Lord caused the warriors in the camp to fight against each other with their swords. Don't miss this. Gideon and his soldiers obeyed, but God caused the victory. God caused the victory. Gideon moved, but God delivered. God threw the enemy into confusion, and they started killing each other. Now, this is the tension of faith, right? It's like we step out in obedience, but we trust God for only what he can do. We do whatever God tells us to do, but the outcome is always in the Lord's hands. One of my favorite verses, it's like one of my top verses, Proverbs 21:31. The horse is made ready for battle, but victory rests with the Lord. What is our job? Preparing the horse for battle. That is our job. But victory always rests with the Lord. Our job, be obedient. Do what God's asking. Prepare the horse for battle. God's job, the victory. And this is where it gets personal. See, a lot of people believe in God, but they don't depend on God. They admire their faith, but they don't arrange their life where they need any. They arrange their life where the faith is barely necessary. Let me just tell you, to live a life of faith means that there's going to be moments when obedience goes beyond what you can control. Like God may call you to have the conversation, the tough conversation, but you can't control how the other person reacts. God may call you to apologize, but you can't control whether they forgive you or not. God may call you to lead your family spiritually, but you can't control if they like it or not. God may call you to be generous. You can't control every financial variable in your life. God may call you to forgive, but you can't control whether the other person ever owns what they did. And God may call you to step into leadership, but you can't control whether you're going to feel confident every day. You obey. God owns the outcome. That is not weakness. That's actually freedom. It's freedom. What's your job? Obey. What's God's job? Victory. The outcome. When's the last time you had to step out in faith that required you to depend on God to show up, or you were going to fall flat on it? When's the last time that you stepped out in faith and you knew that if God didn't show up, it wasn't going to work? For many of us, we can't remember because it's been that long. Or we do remember, but it's been far too long that we've actually stepped out in faith and done what God was asking us to do. So the question is, where is God calling you right now to step out beyond your comfort zone and depend on him? Where is it? Chances are you know. But where is God calling you to step out of your comfort zone and depend on him right this moment? Are you willing to do it and trust God with the outcome? You know what's amazing? It's been over 3,100 years that have passed since Gideon, and so much has changed in culture, yet so much is exactly the same in the human condition. God knows that you and I struggle with the same thing that Gideon struggled with. He lacked confidence in himself. That's me, that's you. He struggled to believe God's identity for him. He had to learn to trust and depend on God for the battles that he faced. Gideon had no idea how high the potential was in him. Just like some of you, you have no idea the potential that is in you if you would just step out in obedience and prepare the horse. You have no idea what God could do through you. And God used Gideon through his doubt. See, we think we have doubts, we're not ready. God used Gideon through his doubt, saved an entire nation from slavery. And I'll just tell you, this Gideon story resonates with me. I feel this. And this resonates with our church. And let me just tell you, right now, you are sitting here as a part of Gideon's 300. Let me explain that. Here's how this story relates. We are in a season of remarkable change as a church. God has asked us to do something that is well beyond what I have ever seen done, and maybe you as well. It's like for a lot of years, as a pastor for over half of my time, I've been a pastor for 30 years, for over half that time, I was at big churches, churches of 10,000 plus. I've been through multiple building campaigns. For those of you that don't know, we're in a building campaign. We have been in one for the last few years. I've been in multiple big building campaigns for those big churches, and in many ways, the building campaigns actually made sense. We're a big church. We have big resources. So we're going to do a big building campaign. But here, like, I look at what God has called us to do. Buy 15 acres of land in Horizon West, which we have done. Create a youth sports focused property. We've already begun doing that. We have 4 acres of sports fields already done. Build a 36,000 square foot building with a preschool and a vision to fill that property with people from the community playing youth sports 7 nights a week. And to use that property as a way to draw the community to us so we might be able to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with them. Big vision. I've never seen or been a part of a vision like this that God has given us. It is unique. It's a big dream. It's a big calling to do something new in Horizon West for God. And God has chosen us to be the ones to pursue and take on this vision in this unique way. He could have chosen any church in this area. Frankly, there are so many bigger churches and better churches around here than us. And I'm not dissing us. I'm just looking around and going, well, yeah, they're bigger and they do things better than we do. Doing a building project like we're doing is for a church of thousands of people where it makes sense, not a small church like us. If we counted up everyone who calls Crossline home, who comes every 4 to 6 weeks, we'd have like 400 to 500 people that would be on the list. But here's why I've leaned on this Gideon story throughout the process. Do you know how many people show up here every week on a Sunday morning? Just under 300. Between 250 and 300. We're Gideon's army. That's what we are. God came to us in our little Windermere Prep wine press. And he has called us to break down the gates of hell and tell people about Jesus. He's called us to do that. He's called us to save people from living a life without Christ. The numbers don't look right. We're not big enough to do a $12 million project, yet God has chosen us out of all the churches in this area to fulfill and to pursue this particular vision. And so this story is for us. Like if you call this church your home, God is saying to us and to you as a part of this community, Crossline, you are a mighty warrior, and I am with you. Go. In the strength that you have, and I will give you the victory. That's what God is saying. I'm not afraid of your doubts. I'm not afraid of what you might be worried about. I'm going to do this through you. So put your faith and trust in me to get this done. And I will tell you, every single roadblock that we have come up against throughout this process, every county issue that has come up, every moment where we needed resources to come through, God has come through for us. And if you've not made it out to our property, you need to come out there on Old YMCA Road. It is amazing what God has done through our little Gideon's 300. Every time we were at the edge of this not happening, God has come through. And this is just the beginning. We back in February, we got full approval by the Board of County Commissioners to do every single thing that we were asking to do. Full approval, unanimous. It's amazing. Right now, we're working through the development plan with the county. In a couple of months, we're going to be going for the construction permits. In about a month, we're going to be starting to meet with the bank to work on getting the loans that we need to get to actually break ground this fall. We're still on track to potentially break ground this fall. We still need to raise $400,000 to go towards the down payment. I don't know where that's going to come from, but I trust God. I love it. This is my prayer. I'm like, God, the Bible says that God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. And I'm like, God, we just need one hill. One hill worth of cattle, we'll be fine. All I know is that throughout this process, God continues to go with us. And as we obey him and keep moving forward, God continues to show up. And you know what I love about this experience so far? When we step into our new building, which we will, and we see hundreds and hundreds of families on our property, hundreds and hundreds of families in our church, you know who's going to get all the credit? Not us. It's just be God. How do you guys do this? To be honest with you, I don't know. We had a torch and some clay jars, and we're just standing on a hillside screaming. But look at what God's done. Look at the lives that God has changed. Like all of that, the victory belongs to the Lord. And I'll just tell you, I could not be more excited to be leading the charge with you. This is the ride of a lifetime. I can't wait to see how it turns out. So here's the challenge. I think it would be worth it to you to figure out the calling that God has placed on your life. Because he's got a calling. He's got a Gideon-like calling for your life that's bigger than you that you can only pull off with God's help. My challenge, you figure out what that is. If you don't know what it is, you start asking God, God, what do you want me to do? He'll tell you. All he's looking for, again, is access. He's looking for somebody that says, I'm available. He's looking for somebody that'll say, God, speak, I'm listening. It's like, what's God calling you to do? Write it down. Put it in ink. Let it be written. Let it be done. And then tell somebody. So that there's two people or more that are witnesses to realize that you've been called by God and you know what it is. And then the next thing is just take a step. Take a step this week. Take a step of obedience. What if it's one step of obedience that's holding you back from fulfilling the calling that God has placed on your life? For some of you, you know what that step of obedience is? It's accepting Jesus right now. Maybe you've never crossed the line of faith. I want to give you the opportunity. So would everybody in here, would you bow your head and close your eyes with me? If you're ready to step across the line of faith, just pray with me. All you got to do is, it's more the posture of your heart than the words that you say, and just say, Dear God, thank you for loving me. Thank you for sending Jesus into the world. I believe he died on the cross for my sins. I believe he rose again. Forgive me, God, for my sins. Give me the gift of eternal life. God, I surrender my life to you right now. And God, for the rest of us, you know what you've called us to. Would you help us surrender? Would you help us give up control and just surrender to you? Would you help us trust you like Gideon for the outcome? But help us step out in faith and just obey. And God, thank you for calling our church to carry out the vision that you've entrusted us with. We're doing our best to prepare the horse for battle. And we trust you. We trust you for the victory. In your holy name,
Amen.